Welcome to Resiliency Redefined. I'm your host, Robin, and I am thrilled to share with you information about resiliency, well-being, performance, education, business, parenting, and everything in between. I'm committed to joining you each week to talk about these big ideas and bring them into action, habits, tools, strategies, tactics that allow us to finally uncover what it takes to truly be well. And I'm just so excited that you're here. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Resiliency Redefined. I'm your host, Robin. And today I'm excited to answer a question that came in. And again, please feel free, ask me anything. If there's something that you're curious about or have any wonderments about, please feel free. Don't be shy. Reach out. We would love to hear from you. But the question that was so interesting that I wanted to dive into was this idea about safety. A listener commented that, you know, Robin, you use the word often about safety as it relates to stress and our nervous system. And the question is like, what does safety actually feel like, or what does it look like? And how do you know if you are safe? So again, I just love the vulnerability in this question, and also the like, just the practicality of how interesting is it that we use words like safe, like grounded, calm, anxious. We use these big words so often, and there's this understanding that we all know what we're talking about, or at least have a general idea. So I so appreciated this pause when you asked me, well, Robin, what does safe actually feel like? What does that look like? So we're going to dive in that together right now. So the notion of safety as it relates in psychology, as it relates to stress, ultimately, our nervous system, and I've said this before, is our first line of defense. It wants to keep us safe. It wants us to be okay. And it uses things to grab our attention, like anxiety, like fear, like overwhelm, to try and get us to pay attention. And what's amazing is that when our nervous system is activated and we don't feel safe, we have those four predominant reflex reactions. Now, you've probably heard this before, like fight, flight, but there's also freezing and that fawning where we essentially like kind of placate and just want it to end. So we do whatever we have to do just to get the uncomfortable situation to be finished with. Now, why I share that with you, again, why do we have all these like biological tactics? Because our body's trying to get back to a place of being safe. And you know what this is like when, for example, like if you're a little bit like me, maybe like you are like in a situation, or maybe you're like, you know, maybe you're like walking into a room and it's dark and like something catches your eye and you feel this like fear, right? You have that like, oops, what's that? And you're scared. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, it's just a gym bag at the front door. Or, you know, you think someone's at the, you know, maybe somebody's like walking in the backyard. And you're like, oh, that's just a shadow coming through the fence or whatever it might be. I don't even know if that makes sense. But I'm trusting that you know that like, feeling, right? Quick, get your attention, because our body wants you to respond, and it does it in terms of that reflex. And then essentially you go into that fight, flight, freezing, or fawning. So again, when we think about how this relates to a sense of safety, is that our body wants us to be okay. It's trying to protect ourselves. It's just trying to survive. So when we talk about what does safe look like or feel like, for people, it's going to vary. There's a general consensus that the body is in a place of regulation, that the body is in a place of like steadiness and that sense of calm, which means our nervous system is like in that space of like, it's always on point. Okay. Our nervous system is like always on guard, but in that moment, it's like at ease, soldier, like at ease, you're good. Now, if something changes rapidly, boom, your nervous system's going to kick in. But for that moment, there's it's still on overwatch. Don't get me wrong. Our nervous system is always taking in information. However, it can do it in such a way more as an observer versus as an actor who needs to make a choice. Okay, so where does that sense of safety come from? Now, as you might recall, I was someone in when I was working in psychology and I was a student, I did a lot of work learning about attachment theory. And one of the things that we know, and I was trowned to use the research from Bowlby, obviously, which is in Mary Ainsworth, which is like the traditional attachment. And also, I learned about Kim Bartholomew's work out from the West Coast in Canada, who talked about this idea that when we're really little, like newborns and up to about 18 months, we establish these patterns of trust with our caregiver. Now, Bowlby was the one who famously said our attachment impacts our lives from cradle to grave. Our attachment style impacts our life from like cradle to grave. That was Bowlby's work. And what that means is those early experiences with our caregivers, that is going to fundamentally create these like ways in which we operate or how our nervous system is operating in different situations. Now, Kim Bartholomew, Dr. Kim Bartholomew, excuse me, she introduced the kind of the four areas. There's secure, which means I have a high trust in others and I have a high trust in myself. That's securely attached. And then there's preoccupied, which is I have a high sense of trust in other people, but a lower sense of trust within myself. So that's preoccupied. And then there was dismissing, which is I have a high trust in myself and a low trust in others. And then fearful, I have a low trust of self. I have a low trust in others. That's fearful. So, what we know from essentially 0 to 18, how our primary caregiver looks after us, we are going to fall into somewhere into this attachment practice. Okay, somewhere into these attachment categories. Now, no one is 100% one or the other, but in Bartholomew's model, we might have, for example, like we might be secure with a dash of preoccupied or secure with a leaning towards dismissing. The ones that aren't compatible, we can't be preoccupied and dismissing at the same time. Now, what this all has to do with the question of what does safe feel like? It's the idea that in some scenarios, for some people, especially if we're dismissing, safety is going to be like a one-person job. They're going to do what they need to do to feel safe because they don't really trust other people to help them get to that place of regulation or that sense of safety. These are my lone wolves, and there's no judgment in any of these categories. Okay. Just get really curious about where does this help us understand human behavior. So my dismissing, when they feel unsteady, when things are uncertain or when things are off, they're betting on themselves 100%. Okay, they're not going to trust somebody else to help them get into a place of regulation. Now, my preoccupied person, which I relate to on such a deep level, this is when we have high trust of others and lower sense of self. So what that looks like is that when things feel really insecure, like feel, I want to not use that word to make it more complicated, when things feel wobbly, when things feel turbulent, when things are uncertain, they're going to look for external people to help them feel soothed. Okay. Now, yes, they can soothe themselves in most of the times, but overarching, they're going to like want other people to give them some reassurance, right? They want other people to tell them you are okay or let them know that it's going to be okay. Now, fearful, unfortunately, my souls that are in that fearful category, life is just really tricky. To be honest, life is just very, very tricky when you can't trust yourself, but you can't trust other people. So that's a very unique group that requires a different type of support. Now, my dismissing, yep, they're going to check bet on themselves totally. My preoccupied, they're going to lean on other people. And the secure person will be able to ebb and flow between both, right? They're able to call on their own skill sets to feel secure and safe. They're able to ask for help if they need to. Like the reality, if you happen to be a securely attached person, I think that's a little bit like the lottery. I wish more of us could be secure. Now, interestingly, on the surface, the majority of us present secure. Oh my gosh, do we ever present secure? But when we're under stressors, when we're under seasons of uncertainty, when we feel helpless, our true colors come through pretty remarkably. So the majority of the time, you probably are able to operate. I can operate as a secure. Maybe we even work towards earn secure, which is a whole other episode we can talk about. But the idea is that when the stressor comes along, that big thing that's making us wobbly, we're going to either A, lean into ourselves and be able to ask for help if we're secure. My preoccupied are going to need the people around them to help them create a sense of security. My dismissing, they're probably going to just figure it out on their own, head down, get the work done. Now, again, there's no judgment in any of the categories. It's just helpful to have these insights as to why people like show up differently under stress seasons or stress conditions. Now, the question that we could ask is like, okay, so how does that relate to security and safety when, again, we're going through something difficult? So for some people, let's say that they're waiting to get news. Maybe you're in a waiting season and you're waiting for news. You're waiting for a change. Maybe you're a little bit trapped in the when then trap. When I get through this, then I'm going to be okay. So let's say you're in that mean time, whatever that mean time is. And I love that it's called the mean time because I know it feels pretty mean, even though that's not what they meant when they call it the mean time. Let's say it's the messy in between. That is going to, when you're in that moment, that in between, when you are needing to feel secure, if you're somebody who's preoccupied, it's really valuable to have a conversation with a trusted loved one, right? Somebody who's able to like give you a little bit of reassurance, a little bit of comfort, being able to, for example, if you're an overthinker, talk with an overexplainer, right? Like if you're somebody who overthinks, find an overthinker who is matched with an overexplainer so they can keep having the conversation with you as many times as you need to get a sense of being okay. Now, if you're somebody who leans towards the dismissing and you're in this like middle time, chances are you're going to do a lot of distracting behavior, right? A lot of procrastinating behavior, maybe distracting behavior. You're just not going to sit with that big feeling because it doesn't feel very good. So again, just recognizing how do we find a sense of security? The dismissing person, they're going to get busy. They're going to start some house projects. They're going to just get into motion. They're going to just kind of move their way through that discomfort. The preoccupied person, they need that little bit of encouragement, right? So that would be that walk with a trusted friend or that phone call. Now, let's say you don't have that person, journaling or free flow writing is going to give you a sense of safety, even though you don't have another person involved. Just being able to make the invisible visible, get it out of your head, put it on paper, going through that motions of processing that feeling is probably going to give you an amazing return on your investment. Now, secure people, I'm not putting a ton of emphasis here because y'all figure it out. Okay. Good for you. You already won that lottery. It's the people who are in these other camps. We need a little bit more instruction or some insights on how to kind of create that sense of security. Now, interestingly, I also think what's really important, regardless of attachment, okay, so let's take a big step outside of attachment. I think it is so important when we think about feeling safe and secure that we trust our instincts. Trust yourself. Your nervous system has kept you alive thus far. Your survival rate for all the stuff has been 100%. You are literally batting a thousand, staying alive. Trust your instincts. Now, I'll give you an example. A wee while ago, I was as I travel quite a bit, and I was going through the airport, and I was in like the Nexus line, so I was going through the airport pretty quickly, and I was just waiting for my bags on the other side of security. Because if you know me, you know I will never check a bag. Doesn't matter if I'm going to be in minus 30 and plus 30 on the same trip, I will fit this into carry-on. I do not check luggage. So even to the point where when I celebrated Christmas, because our family celebrate Christmas this past Christmas season in Alberta, even with all of the gifts and all of it, the five of us all check in. No, not check in, carry on. Carry on is what we did. There was nothing checked, which was, I think, pretty remarkable. Okay. Back to the story. So I'm going through, I'm just waiting for my suitcase, and a person comes up beside me and says, oh, it looks like you travel often, by how I had like put my stuff in the bin, right? He's like, oh, you travel often. He's like, where are you going today? And my instincts was like, I don't like anything about how this conversation just started. Now, it could have been completely innocent, 100%. But there was just something about the way he said, oh, you travel often. Where are you going today? It was like, that is such an easy question to answer. But my instincts was like, I don't want to answer that question. So I just said, oh, out west. And I was again waiting for the rest of my stuff to come through. And he goes, oh, well, I'm heading out west. What city are you flying into? And I'm like, I said, oh, I said, interesting. I said, I'm good. Thanks. And he said, I just asked you where you're flying to. I'm making small chat. It's not a big deal. What's your problem? So as soon as he got like a little bit like cheesed with me because I wasn't telling him, in that moment, I was like, thank you, instincts. I'm glad you don't know what flight I'm going on. And what was so remarkable is he said, you don't have to be rude about it. I was just being nice. And I turned to the gentleman and I said, sir, I'm traveling and I travel a lot. And something that I know is I don't talk about my travel plans with strangers. And that's not me not being nice. I said, like, just like read the room. I'm not comfortable and I'm okay not to be okay in this situation. I'm not going to tell you where I'm going, but thank you. Like, goodbye. And what was amazing, he grabbed his bag and he like huffed off and he was just like, oh, people these days. And I had this moment and I looked up and the security officer was like on the other side of the conveyor belt thing. And he looked at me and he said, good for you. And I said, pardon? And he's like, good for you. He said, I see creeps come here all the time, specifically looking at solo travelers. He's like, I'm glad you didn't disclose that. He's like, you don't have to. And I was so appreciative. Oh my goodness. I was so appreciative for that security agent because something that I know about my temperament is I would have likely walked to where I was going and probably carried a little bit of like guilt of the fact, like, oh, was I being rude? Should I have said that? Should I not have said that? And as soon as that external person, that neutral party said, like, sister, you did that right, I felt a sense of relief because I had an external party telling me, like, yeah, you're good. And I appreciated that he spoke up, that that security person said, like, no, you made the right call. You're a solo traveler. You shouldn't be doing that. And it just reminded me in that moment of something that years ago, I remember I was walking with Ava and we were in a larger city. And there was a gentleman who clearly was struggling, an unhomed gentleman, clearly struggling. And he came very, very close to where Ava and I were. And Ava, in a very assertive voice, said, like, move. Like, I need you to get out of my way, move. And in that moment, this part of me was just like, Ava, don't be rude. And I just was like, okay. And I just kind of followed her quickly as we kind of darted around the gentleman and we kept walking. But my first instinct was tell her not to be rude. And we got to where we were going. And obviously, like nothing involved more than that with that gentleman. And anyway, I said to Ava, I'm like, girl, whoa, we got to chat about that. That was like a little bit rude. And she looked at me and like with the most confidence said, I have a right to be rude to anyone who's making me uncomfortable. What? Where did you learn that? Because somewhere along the line, I put a messaging that like we're supposed to be polite and we're not supposed to rock the boat and you have to be nice. Yet this little creature right in front of me said, I have a right to be rude to anyone who is making me uncomfortable. And I just could not help thinking like, you have that really figured out, girl, right? I was so proud of her that wherever she had picked up that lesson, that she wasn't going to be put in situations where she didn't feel uncomfortable. Like she had a voice. And so as I was like going through this and walking to my gate, I had a moment being like, A, I'm so glad Ava shared that with me, that she taught me that. B, I was so glad that the security dude was like, hey, no, you're totally good. You're good. And again, I just, how we feel safe. Again, it comes down to attachment 100%, but it's also trusting our instincts, right? Trusting our instincts because we have this like really interesting kind of part of how we organize information. And it allows us to essentially process information quickly, right? So, for example, we start to make patterns, we categorize things, and we talk about these like mental mnemonics, how it pulls information together quickly. But even within that, it's so important that we trust our instincts. So, for example, if you're, walking home late at night and, you see somebody like questionable coming up behind you, I don't want you to be like, oh, I don't want to be a judgy person. Maybe this scary stranger danger isn't a scary one. Let me find out. Heck no. Cross the street, get to a busy area, right? Like, again, even though we have mental shortcuts, these heuristics, it's important that we still stay tuned to those little spidey senses. I think it's absolutely key. And my other kind of area about this notion of like feeling safe is to pay attention. Oh my goodness. As you're kind of going through your day, notice, pay attention. If you're in situations where you're like, hey, you know what? I don't feel good about this, then switch it up. We don't have to stay in situations where we're not comfortable. Now, again, we just need to be paying attention. Now, that goes for when we're like navigating in the big world, but also in our relationships. Notice, like, am I feeling a sense of regulation when I'm with this person? Or every time I see this person, am I noticing that I feel really defensive or I start to feel a wee bit anxious? Or maybe I overthink everything that I said, right? So just notice how you feel in certain situations and what's going on. See if you can catch the information that your nervous system is picking up. I don't want you to ignore it. Don't override it. Be present, which is so important for us to know when we're feeling safe, where we have the best probability of regulation versus when we're feeling unsettled. Now, the last little idea I'd love to share with you here is how do we create these moments of safety? And the other thing to be mindful about is I want to make sure your first place to go to feel safe is in your own mind. Okay, so again, physically, we want to make sure that we're safe, but I also want to make sure that your thoughts have a gentle and safe place to land in your own mind. We have to make sure that how we're talking to ourselves is kind, because I think sometimes folks get themselves into such a difficult, like, enmeshed experience when, like, their thoughts aren't even nice to themselves, right? When we're not even saying nice things to ourselves. So, a few little practices on that one. Number one, don't believe anything you think after 9 p.m., right? Anything that your brain pops up after 9 p.m., it's probably not very nice. Just let that go. You're not well resourced at nighttime to keep that compassion and empathetic internal dialogue. All the worry starts to kind of creep up in the dark. The other thing, too, is this is an expression from Dr. James Rouse. This guy is the unicorn. He is so cool. If you're not following Dr. James Rouse, I honestly, you are kind of missing out on this one. So please make sure to give him a follow. He talks about this practice of looking at yourself with soft eyes. So next time you're trying on that outfit or you're getting ready to go out in the day or you're doing that little bit of like, check in with yourself, ensure that you're looking at yourself with soft eyes. How different would that inner dialogue be is if we're looking at ourselves gently, if we're looking at ourselves with abundant levels of compassion and just appreciation and gratitude. So, my friends, I hope that has been helpful. When we think about this notion of safety, we are in control within a realm of how we show up for it. We are very much at the mercy, too, of our attachment, at our nervous system reactivity. But ultimately, you're one breath away. You're one breath away, taking that deep inhalation, that slow exhalation, and trust. In the moment right now, you are okay. And just keep reminding yourself, in this moment, I am okay. And if in this moment you notice you're not okay, get to somewhere where you're okay, which could be into the embrace of a trusted person. It could be, removing yourself from that situation, whatever it is. As Ava has taught me, and I am so proud to be able to pass along to you, you do not have to be in situations that make you uncomfortable under the idea of being nice or being polite. Rock the boat, look after you, look after each other. And I think that's a good way to set us up for being safe for today. So thanks for listening. I appreciate your time, your energy, your interest. And my goodness, I just am just so in awe that this is something that I get to do and I get to bring forward. And please, please, please keep those questions coming in. I want to be of service. So ask away. Take good care. Enjoy your day. Bye. Thank you for spending time with this podcast episode today. I hope you found something helpful in Resiliency Redefined. Please feel free to share it with somebody who you might think could benefit. Maybe there was something useful, something in particular that you think you could pay forward. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. It means the world to me. And again, thanks for your time. Thank you for your interest. Take good care, and I'll see you next time.